prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free. We are Truth Revolution. I am Dave, and with me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church.
I am glad you guys are here listening to this show. We are so excited about what we're going to talk today.
Right, and we are so blessed to be talking about what we're talking about today.
Which is the existence of God.
Right.
How do we know God exists?
Now, this says that we're talking about the
teleological argument, Dave. I know you know that.
The teleological argument, which basically talks about the design of the universe.
Yeah, and the teleological argument is one of the most interesting ways to show that God exists. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways. We got the ontological, we got moral arguments, we have the cosmological, vertical, we have the kalam, we have the teleological, we've got all sorts of different ways. But
I think out of all the arguments that we have for the existence of God, I think the teleological argument is probably my favorite.
Is it really?
Yes.
Mine's the kalam cosmological.
Right, because it's a lot more complex than the teleological argument. But here, this shows the kind of personalities that we have.
See? No.
Yeah, this is very simple and to the point, and it talks about the design and the designer.
That's right.
And, you know, yours get kind of, you know, a little, you have to think a lot.
Mine's not all that crazy.
I know, it's not crazy.
You could basically take the Kalam argument down to one question.
Okay.
How'd we get here? That's the basic argument in a nutshell.
Well, there you go. But I still like this one best.
Okay, well, the teleological, it's harder to do in a nutshell. If you had to do it in a nutshell, you'd say, we're complicated.
Right. That's true. Because we have to prove that we are great design.
Right. Here's the deal. Okay, let's everybody imagine that I walk in front of you, and I actually do this at some places.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I have a box, and I take this box, I scoop up, I've got some little springs in my hand, I've got some metal shavings, I've got some gears, little broken glass. I take all these pieces, I throw them into a box, and then I shake the box.
Mm-hmm.
I even got some coins in there, some wires. I shake it up
you're making some stuff, right?
Yeah, I'm shaking it for like 2 or 3 minutes, open the box up, and I pull out a watch.
You're good.
I say, all right, no one would actually believe that I made a watch just by chance by shaking it with, you know, this box full of gears and wires.
Well, to talk to some of these people out there, you would think that that's how it happened.
Well, you know, I mean, you know that the watch wasn't an accident.
Yeah. Great watchmaker, Jeff Peepo.
Yeah, right. You know it had a creator because something that complex, that specifically designed piece of material, it just doesn't happen in nature.
Right. And in a watch, every piece plays a part.
Exactly. Every piece has to be just the right place. It's it's very complicated. And the watch wasn't designed by accident. It had a creator. It didn't just spring into existence. And this is the same thing we're saying about the world.
Right.
And this is how we know a God exists. Our world, our bodies, our universe, our galaxy, all contain a lot of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
It all works together just perfectly. Now, we're going to get into the details, but the argument, if you're making a philosophical argument, it basically goes something like this. It starts with number one. It says, all designs imply a designer.
Right. And number two would be, there is great design in the universe.
So the conclusion would be, there must be a great designer of the universe.
Right.
If designs really do imply a designer, and if the universe has great design, well, then the universe must have a great designer.
Right.
And this is a biblical argument as well. For those of you who want to know what the Bible says, Romans 1:20, actually, it says this about the teleological argument in a nutshell.
For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen. Exactly. Being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse.
Now, in Christian circles, we often focus on that latter part, so that men are without an excuse. So
right.
We say, look, everyone should know God exists. But we want to focus on that middle part there. God's power, his nature, they've been seen, being understood from what has been made.
Right.
What's been made? Well, you and me.
Yeah.
The world.
Everything around you, the universe.
The galaxy. Mm-hmm. Everything that's been made by God is evidence of his nature and power. So we look at this, it's called general revelation. We look at the world around us, and we should be able to know that God exists by the very presence of the things around us.
Right.
John MacArthur, who is a respected theologian and teacher, he says this. Even in the most ancient of times, long before the telescope and microscope were invented, the greatness of God was evident both in the vastness and in the tiny intricacies of nature. Mm-hmm. Men could look at the stars and discover the fixed order of their orbits. They could observe a small seed reproduce itself into a giant tree exactly like the one from which it came. They could see the marvelous cycles of the seasons, the rain and the snow. They witnessed the marvel of human birth and the glory of the sunrise and the sunset. Even without the special revelation of David that David had, which is the scriptures, mm-hmm. they could see that the heavens are telling the glory of God and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands, which is Psalm 19. Now, if you're not a believer and you're listening to this, basically what this guy is saying is, even before, I'm just saying, if you're not a believer, if you don't accept what the Bible says there, even before we knew all the details about DNA and all the crazy stuff going on in your cells, and before we knew the vastness of the galaxy, and that if you focus the Hubble telescope on a little tiny dark spot in the sky, you'd expose it for a long time and realize there's thousands of galaxies in that little tiny spot far mm-hmm. away. And before we knew all of this, you could still see there was a lot of design and complexity in the universe.
Right, and the design and complexity of our universe basically shows everything works together. Now, let's take it back to the watch that we were talking about before.
That's right. Now, let's actually, before we do that, okay. If I can interrupt.
Yeah, do.
Let's go through these line by line, okay?
All right.
Number one, we're just going to see if these are true.
Okay.
Because if number one and number two from our argument are true, then the conclusion's true. God exists. Right. So number one was all designs imply a designer.
Right.
Is that true? For example, rocks, motorcycles, poems, snowflakes, skyscrapers, river paths, brain, all these things are designed in a way.
Right.
Let's talk about this. Let's talk about rocks. Now, they don't necessarily look like they've been designed. And so if you walk upon a trail in the forest and you look down, you see a rock there, you're not going to pick up this rock and go, wow, what an amazing design.
Right.
But if you walked into a forest and you saw rocks placed in strategically into lines that formed the word help with an arrow pointing to the east, what would you know?
You would know that somebody needs help in that direction.
Exactly.
And you would beat feet the other direction.
And why? Wait a minute. What do you would go the other way?
I would just say
no. No, I mean, obviously, even rocks, if you just do the simplest thing, put them in some lines, you know a human designed it all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
A motorcycle, how do you know that's designed?
It's got all these moving parts that move in just the exact right way to get the engine to fire to turn the wheel.
That's right. There's serious design there. And so you know someone made it that way. What about a poem? How do you know they just didn't just throw a bunch of alphabet soup in on the table and it spelled out a poem?
Right. You're talking about all the chimps on the typewriter pounding away and eventually coming up with The War and Peace.
Yeah. And now that we have the internet and everybody has their own blog, we know that thing about all the chimps typing on a typewriter is not
true.
True. It's not true.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
It will not produce anything intelligent. But, poems are a good example because we have letters. There's only 24 or 26, whatever. I can't even remember right now.
26.
And so,
or is it 28?
It's not 28. We smart. Listen to us. No, but you have the 26 letters, and you know it really doesn't seem like that many letters.
Right.
But you can't just throw down a bunch of alphabet soup and end up with a haiku.
That's true.
You can't. Norman Geisler, he says this: anytime we've seen a complex design, we know by previous experience that it came from the mind of a designer. It's important to note that complex design is meant specified complexity. A crystal, for example, has specificity, but not complexity. It, like a snowflake, has the same basic patterns repeated over and over. Random polymers, which is a type of molecule, on the other hand, has complexity, but no specificity.
Right.
A living cell, however, has both specificity and complexity. This kind of type of complexity is never produced by purely natural laws. It is always the result of an intelligent being.
Right.
Let's define this a little bit more, okay? Specificity. To have specificity, something has to contain a certain amount of, let's call it purposeful direction. right? We talked about the rocks lined up that say help with an arrow. Like, that's not very complex.
Yeah.
But it's very specific.
Yeah, so it must be specific is what specificity is.
Right, to call something, to say that something is designed, it has to be specific.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the help spelled out by the rocks is very specific.
It is.
There's nothing complex about it, but it's very specific, so you know it was designed. Now, things also have to be complex. Okay, you could have, if I took a bunch of marbles and I threw them on the ground and then attached wires to all of them, I've just made something very complex.
Yes, you have.
Now, there's no specificity to it. It's very random.
Right.
It's not specific at all. So it's not necessarily designed.
Right.
Now, if I, for instance, took a soundboard and looked at the wires and the knobs inside, that's very complex.
It is.
But it's also very specific, because if you hook one of those wires up to the wrong place, it won't work anymore.
Right, yeah.
So when you have something that is both specific and complex, you know it had to be designed that way.
Exactly. And so let's take it back to the watch.
Okay.
Okay. You take one little piece out of that watch.
Yeah.
It stops working.
Exactly. Because a watch is very specific. Uh-huh. Everything has to be just where it is. It's also complex. There are lots of working parts in there.
Right. And when you compare that to the human body, wow.
Ooh.
I mean, our bodies are very, very complex.
Extremely complex.
And very specific.
Very specific. I have a nurse friend who was just telling me that she was looking through some of her textbooks from nursing school, and over it says in there, we're really not sure exactly how all this works, but it works,
right.
And here's what we know so far. It is so complex. We still don't understand everything about the human body, especially the human brain.
Right.
But it's very, very specific. It's not like you can just say, oh, well, you know what? I'm going to attach this artery to the other part of the body to make it work and try to make the blood go the other direction. It's very specific.
So basically you're saying that doctors right now are to the point with medicine, the way mechanics were like back in the 30s and 40s, baling wire fixed everything.
I wouldn't say that. I would say that automobiles just happen to exist right here.
Uh-huh.
We don't understand why, but we know mechanics and fix parts of them.
Right.
Very smart mechanics. We need to know more about that car.
I see.
We need to know more about our human bodies. But the point is, our bodies are complex and specific, which shows design.
Right.
Now, we're going to get into number two. Is there great design in the universe overall?
We contend so.
This is really good stuff. Uh-huh. We're going to talk, quoting a guy here from NASA. Really good stuff. You don't want to miss it on the other side of the show. Head on over to truthrevolution.tv.
Right, you can donate. You can also listen to past shows.
That's right. We got all sorts of great content on there. Truthrevolution.tv, made just for you.
Mm-hmm.
Come on over, visit. Consider donating, because you are the people who make this show happen.
Thank you very much. See you on the other side of the break.
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com. That's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com. K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. We've been growing, and now we're going to two services.
Sunday morning at 9 a.m. or 11:15 a.m. Check us out at salinarevolution.com.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Well, most people here hadn't been for a long, long time, if ever, so don't worry, you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11:15 a.m.
salinarevolution.com, or check us out on Facebook.
Revolution!
Truth Revolution.
And we are back.
We're talking about the teleological argument.
That's right.
How do we know God exists?
The proof for the existence of God. Of course, this is where faith and reason meet.
That's okay? Right. We love logic.
Yeah, we're not just thinking here. we're thinking and thinking about faith, and we have faith, and we can put them together, and it doesn't make a wreck.
That was really complex, though, what you just said.
It almost didn't make sense.
But it was specific.
Right.
We were talking about how things have to be designed, and when things are designed, we know there's a designer.
Right.
I know my watch was made not by accident, not because I shook some gears in a box, but because someone specifically put everything just where it's supposed to be, and it's very complex. You don't get specific and complex things arising by nature.
Right.
By chance.
And you look at snowflakes. Okay?
Yeah.
Snowflakes are very, very complex.
They are. They're very intricate designs.
Now, is there specificity?
No. There's no reason they have to be the way they are. There's nothing specific about it at all.
Well, they look pretty.
They are pretty, but they aren't necessarily designed.
But yeah, but things looking good doesn't necessarily mean that it's designed.
No, they have to work a certain way. So we kind of proved number one on our argument. We said all designs imply a designer, and that's
right.
True.
Yes.
Number two, there's great design in the universe. And if this is true, then we know there's a great designer of the universe. Because, hey, if all designs have a designer, and if there's great design in the universe, then the universe has to have a great designer.
Right.
So we looked at number one in the last part of the show. We're going to look now at number two. There is great design in the universe. Is that true?
Man, we contend so, but hey, don't take our word for it.
No, and if you have an objection, go ahead and message us. Let us know. Mm-hmm. We'd love to answer or think about anything you have.
Right. You go to, questions at truth...
Revolution.tv?
Yes.
Yep, you can go to our website, hit contact. You know, that would work too. So, all right, Robert Jastrow, he's an astrophysicist, and he was the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies.
Mm-hmm.
He said this. Now, he's not a Christian, as far as I know. I think he's an agnostic.
Okay.
But this is what he says about the design in the universe. Now, we see how the astronomical evidence supports the biblical view of the origin of the world.
Uh-huh.
The essential elements in the astronomical and biblical accounts of Genesis are the same. Now, here's where I like his quote. Consider the enormousness of the problem.
He sees a problem there.
Science has proved that the universe exploded into being at a certain moment. It asks, what cause produced this effect? Who or what put the matter and energy into the universe? And science cannot answer these questions.
Although it is trying very hard.
You see, he's recognizing there's some design to this universe.
Right.
It didn't, and we're actually getting a little bit into the Kalam cosmological argument with what he said, but he's also getting a little bit towards the design argument. There's design in this universe. It exploded into existence. And if you read what NASA's discovered about the universe,
mm-hmm.
about how the Earth is in just the right place in our galaxy. Mm-hmm. It's in just the right place in our solar system.
Right.
It has just the right type of atmosphere, just the right type of
stuff.
Plate tectonics. Sorry, I was thinking about three different things. Plate tectonics. It has the right size moon, the right density moon. It has Jupiter type planets.
Right.
It has the right mass of a Jupiter type planet. It has.
Right. We were talking about our solar system. I mean, you think, well, what is it? 8.5 planets, maybe? poor Pluto. But I still
believe.
Yeah, everything in our solar system works for a purpose.
That's right.
You know?
In fact, we've done a show in the past mm-hmm. where we've talked about over 400 things that need to exist for life to occur.
Right.
There are over 400 things that need to exist for life to occur. There's great design in this universe. There is a book, 20 Compelling Evidences That God Exists. And they've talked about how complex our universe is. Mm-hmm. And they said this.
On a multiplicity of levels, life exhibits a highly complex, specified order that cannot be expected as the inevitable outcome of a natural process.
Cannot be explained as an inevitable outcome.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
The point may be illustrated with DNA. DNA micromolecule uses a complex structure that looks every bit like a very, very long spiral staircase or ladder. Each step or rung is formed by pairing up of two of the four nucleotides around the DNA called adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine.
Yes, nice work there.
Thank you very much. When cells reproduce, the two rails or strands untwist and separate from each other, then reconnect to other strands to form exact duplicates
of
the original.
Yeah, and here's where it gets good. They say for DNA to work, It's not enough to have lots of A's, T's, C's, and G's strung together. That would be like having Scrabble tiles line up to spell nonsense words.
Which I do all the time. Thank you very much.
The nucleotides must be strung together in a precise order, and the two strands matched up to convey information to the rest of the cell that determines its overall structure, properties, and functions. In other words, the nucleotides must be arranged in a highly specific and highly complex order that conveys meaningful instructions. They function just like the letters in a sentence, except that given the length and complexity of a typical DNA double helix, a better comparison would be the letters that form a chapter or even a book.
Right.
It's very, you see what they're saying here is even your DNA, I mean, forget whether or not the world is in the right place in the universe. Mm-hmm. Just go inside your body. Your DNA is so complex and so specific. Everything has to be lined up just perfectly. And if right. it's not, you're not going to get a living, breathing person.
Right. So it's stuff that we go straight from what we can see in the universe to we're going totally the opposite direction. Look at all the small stuff.
That's exactly right. You
know, and how that works. It's amazing.
Now, we have an objection here mm-hmm. from Bertrand Russell, who is an atheist. But before we do that, I think we need to take a break and do a Bible contradiction. What do you think about that?
Let's do it.
All right.
Bible contradiction.
All right. Bible contradiction this week comes from thethinkingatheist.com.
Okay.
All right. What color, of robe, was Jesus given? Okay. It says in Matthew 27, 28, they stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. Jesus is given a scarlet robe in this passage.
Okay.
In John 19:2, it says the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they clothed him in a purple robe. Jesus is given a purple robe.
Are you serious?
Is Jesus given a scarlet robe, or is Jesus given a purple robe? What gives? The Bible is wrong.
Is that for real? Or are you making that up?
No, I'm not making it up. I'm looking right here at the website, thethinkingatheist.com. I know you just lost a lot of respect for thethinkingatheist.com.
I did. I used to actually have respect for that place. Are you okay? Matthew 27:28 says scarlet.
Uh huh.
And what was the other one?
John 19:2. Jesus is given a purple robe because evidently he's a K-State fan.
Okay. You've got two different guys describing essentially the same color.
Uh huh.
This is.
Oh, so you're saying that both these things are coming from two different people, and I may say maroon and you may say red, so we're both wrong. We're contradicting each other.
No, this is
I know
the epitome of a ludicrous Bible contradiction. I'm not going to answer it for just a second. Let's just go ahead and assume that it really did list two totally different shades.
Okay.
Two totally different types of colors, okay? What would that mean? You got one guy named John who says white. Mm-hmm. Then you've got another guy named Matthew who says...
Eggshell.
Or gray even. We'll make it even more different than that. Number one, does that actually constitute as a contradiction? A contradiction means these people have said two statements that are so opposite and so different that the essential truth of the statements cannot be reconciled.
Well, scarlet and purple, come on.
No, that is, I mean, the essential truth there is exactly right. I mean, it's exactly the same. There is nothing even... he was wearing, if it was white and gray,
uh-huh.
I mean, maybe one guy saw it while it was in the shade.
Yes.
You know, maybe one guy saw it while it was in the shade. Maybe the other guy didn't. Maybe he saw it from a distance. And
I see you so beside yourself out of Bible contradiction, Jeff.
Well, it's just, it's almost to the point of, and I usually try to do these with respect to the people because there's a lot of legitimate questions. But this is really almost to the point of lunacy. You know, I mean, when you get back even to the Greek words, you know, it's really even more similar than you would think. But anyway, the basic thrust of it is this. It's almost the same exact thing.
Right.
I mean, if I describe something as off-white and you describe it as kind of gray, mm-hmm. that's the same thing here. We're not looking for scientific descriptions.
Right. Just take my bike, for example.
Yeah.
I would call it maroon. Some people call it purple. Other people call it red.
And no one is wrong.
Right.
I mean, it's not like we've said, tell me the color of Jesus' robes in Adobe Photoshop's, you know, number color. Yeah, oh, it's A1227. Yeah. Well, John said it was A1224.
Then that would be a Bible contradiction.
But it's not. I mean, they're both giving generic terms to describe the color of his robe. Purple, lavender.
Right.
Kind of darkish red. I mean, it's all the same thing. And that's the answer for our not a Bible contradiction today.
Bible contradiction.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I didn't mean to throw you such a non-curve.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because sometimes they come with really good ones.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, whoa, I got to think about that.
I know.
And you have to really dig in. You have to really think hard. And then sometimes someone's like, you said a deer, but it was an antelope. And you're like, well, it's almost such a simple explanation that you feel dumb answering it.
Right. So. Well, don't. Because, I mean, those kind of contradictions need to be answered as well because people have those questions. And
Yeah, no, I don't feel dumb answering it. Don't get me wrong. Okay, so anyway, let's get to Bertrand Russell's objection to the teleological argument.
Okay.
This guy's an atheist. He said, the adaptation of means to end in the world is either the result of evolution or else is the result of design.
Mm-hmm.
This adaptation is the result of evolution. Therefore, this adaptation is not the result of design.
Wait a minute. All right. Well, didn't he kind of skip to the conclusion from one to two?
Well, okay. You know, actually, I used to think his argument wasn't valid at all. I kind of think his argument is valid now, but it's not sound. It's not a good argument.
Right.
Because, you know, you might say something like, well, look, either there's Mountain Dew in the bottle or there's not. And there is, so there's Mountain Dew in the bottle. I mean, that's okay argument. The problem is he's making a, number one, he's kind of making a false dichotomy here, but number two, it's not true with a false dichotomy, it's not true that either it's evolution or design.
Right.
Theoretically, only from a philosophical, not a theological standpoint. If you're a Christian, you don't want evolution, don't freak out on me here. But from a philosophical standpoint, evolution and design are not logically incompatible.
Right.
So you can't say that. But also, he says this adaptation is a result of evolution, therefore it's not design. Well, you would have to really show that evolution disproves design, and they haven't done that.
You would have to strip both of them away to where they totally stand separately, because I do know some Christians that hold to, well, and although I don't believe it, some Christians say, well, wouldn't evolution be part of design?
Right. Now, also, you would really have to prove evolution beyond a shadow of a doubt, and I don't think they've done that yet.
Missing a link there.
Yeah. Furthermore, if there's any adaptation which evolution cannot explain, the design argument is either proven better or at least given more credit.
Right.
Because he says, well, it's either evolution or design. Well, that means if there's any type of adaptation at all that evolution can't explain, his argument proves design.
Right. Thanks.
So, thanks, Bertrand Russell. Yeah. You just proved design.
Good job. We'll have him on the show sometime.
Yeah, that was really great. I appreciate it. You see, one of the problems is people make all kinds of crazy, whacked out suggestions about Christianity and science.
Well, I think people try and conform their views or their statements or their their arguments around what they believe, which is not necessarily a bad thing until you just totally strip intelligence out of it.
That's right. But when you really look at it, when you get scientists who are honest, they'll say things like Seth Shostak, who is not a Christian. He's from the SETI Institute. He says the bottom line, actually, when people ask, why do you think there's life out there? He says, well, the universe is extraordinarily rich, extraordinarily vast. So unless there's something very, very special, miraculous, if you will, extraordinarily unusual about Earth, then what happened here must have happened many times. Oh, he just said it.
Yes.
Life occurs when something's miraculous, extemporaneously stupendous.
Right.
So, and he's using it to show, well, life is probably common. So Earth isn't common, but we know if you listen to our past shows and you look at the design that it takes to get all of us together, man.
Something miraculous happened.
Something miraculous happened. This didn't happen by chance. So there's great design in the universe. Whenever there's a great design, you know there was a designer.
Uh-huh.
there must have been a designer for our universe.
Right.
Check us out at truthrevolution.tv for more information on the existence of God.